A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone won who you thought would win, but some made it harder than others, and Brucey gets his bonus. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Thursday, 21st of October. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushan Hantharaja.
Bonjour, Kim Messo!
Hello, mademoiselle!
Mon chéri. It's a great day, aujourd'hui, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought you were channeling Marek Cardi. In fact, it is a beret.
It is a beret.
It is. And it is... where are your onions,
It's a
Jim?
Breton shirt. I didn't have any onions. But I thought this would get the dig across well enough. Do you want to explain why Vish and I are mildly French?
Hi, Football Ramble fans. we spoke to Olivier Giroud a few days ago.
How did we speak to Olivier Giroud a few days ago?
We spoke to him in Cod French. I haven't actually heard it back.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. You went full Joey Barton. You say hello, Olivier. It was brilliant. It was brilliant.
So I haven't actually heard it. This is obviously for a book club that you recorded.
That
so Jim, you were privy to that. But I did hear the producers talking about if they needed to edit it.
If you need to re-record your questions in English, in your own accent.
This is so humiliating.
So for those of you that can't see what we're doing, I'm wearing a stripy shirt. Vish is wearing a beret. We're, you know...
And guys, you look beautiful.
In us, between us, you know, nearly 80. But here we are anyway.
Thanks, guys.
Frenchmen live longer, don't they?
I think,
it's all the smoking.
People said to me on Twitter that, because I said it in an attempt to head off the inevitable.
This could have gone one or two ways. What did they say to you on Twitter?
They said that it's a sign of empathy.
Oh.
It is a little bit. When my grandparents
After
were still alive.
After they stopped laughing, obviously, yeah.
When my grandparents were still alive and I, you know, I could speak a little bit of Tamil, when I would speak to them in English, which they had a small grasp of, I would do it in a Tamil Sri Lankan accent. Mm. Yeah. I wouldn't do it to someone who speaks fluent English, though.
No. So who like you were perhaps move. Interviewing about their book they had written in English.
Yeah, a whole book.
Well, to be fair to me, he didn't, you know, they never write
to be fair
them.
To
no,
you.
No, it's
not what we're here for.
Yeah, less of that, actually.
Okay. So I was thinking what I could do is just speak in a French accent for the rest of my
Please
life
do.
And see if I could
just
get away
it
with
out.
It. Like,
that would be that's the most British way to overcome that embarrassment. No, I normally talk like this. I'm going to talk like this for the rest of my life.
Manchester United, Vish. We don't have to take the hipster fans' word for it anymore. Atalanta are wicked. but
you haven't offended enough people this week, have you?
But final score 3-2 for Manchester United. And in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's assessment of matters, he said that they played very well in the first half, which, look, I don't, obviously I'm not a football manager, and clearly Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows more about football than I will ever know. Probably he has more football knowledge in his little finger than I have in my entire body. But in my, wait, my yeah. Exactly. But that's not how it seemed to me, Vish.
No.
Certainly not by the scoreline, no. If you're one of those people who look, what's the score at half time? Or is it 2-0 down? You know, if you're one of those.
Oh, no, but that is a bit basic. I don't know. I actually don't think the scoreline is the thing. I think the basicness is the thing.
So there was, I suppose the thing about the first half was that United missed a few chances, and then also Atalanta had chances. And if we lived in a fair society, I think we'd all have chances, wouldn't we?
We would.
And I thought, you know,
chances to forget.
Yeah.
Lovely, by the way.
I might wear it for the whole show, actually. Yeah. So I think that was his point, basically, that United could have gone into that with, you know, with goals on the score sheet, and, you know, a lead that would have changed the game. Certainly they had quite a few openings. And we know this about Atalanta. We know this about Manchester United, that they're two very open sides. But yeah, so I think that's what he meant. And obviously he could push a bit harder because they ended up winning the game.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, a lot was made of how much space Fred and Scott McTominay had to cover on their own in the
famous 4-2-4 setup.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, Paul Scholes was kind of fuming about it, as he is about so much.
I think he was right, though.
I know, I think he was right. Like when you
sort
like of see the analysis
simmer,
back
isn't
of
it.
Yeah,
it was,
absolutely.
It yeah,
like a pot boiler almost. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's never actually going to be ready.
Yeah.
It's just going to simmer away. But, you know, seeing it back in the analysis, it was really stark. It was like, I mean, so disjointed between the midfield and the attack. And Atalanta just, I mean, it was easy for them, essentially.
Yeah.
You could argue that the experiment perfectly worked, though. If he was trying to do something experimental, didn't work out. I'm playing devil's advocate. This
yeah,
is not
kind of, kind
believe.
Of in the way that, like, you know, a boxer who counterpunch needs to be punched. You know, the Homer Simpson tactic.
The thing I thought was the more shocking thing was just the errors in defence in that first half.
Yeah, and I suppose
Harry Maguire kind of grabbing like someone at five a side really late for that second goal.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that game and previous games, I'm thinking specifically of Southampton and West Ham last season. They've been snapshots of, you know, Solskjaer under Manchester United. Sorry, Kate's losing herself here.
But they've been fucking better.
Oh, right, yeah.
But they, so they've been snapshots of United under Solskjaer, whereby, you know, you concede early, and then it's more or less all out attack in the second half.
Yes.
And then, you know, this was quite an extreme version of that because it ticked all the, you know, all the stereotypical Man Unitedisms that Solskjaer's tried to prey on. Those big European nights, comebacks, Ronaldo, you know, it's all there. But I think within that, there's, you know, you can leave that game yesterday and not have learned anything new about Manchester United.
Yeah.
And you'll always have this thing of that first half, as Scholes was saying yesterday, should be taken in isolation as where the problems are, and that second half where United's strengths are. The only thing is, it's clearly they can't find a way to harness all that attacking stuff with making them more defensively robust. Mm. And there's also a sense that Solskjaer probably doesn't want to do that anyway, because if he did, he would have signed a defensive midfielder, or he would have developed a way that McTominay and Fred wouldn't have to put out so many fires.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a weird thing where we're no further. You know, a lot of the journalists yesterday who were covering the game were like, I'm just writing the same fucking piece again.
Absolutely,
But actually, should it not be even more damning in the sense that, like, Demirel, let's not forget, Demirel had to go off. The guy who was, like, they're holding it all together, celebrating his blocks like he'd scored the winning goal, you know, really bringing beast mode from Bergamo. You know, he was, like, core to everything.
Yeah.
They've then got to put on, you know, a guy who's obviously a great player, under 21s Italy player, Matteo Lovato, but he's a kid effectively, yeah, who's been put into that position.
Into one of these big like cauldrons of European football.
Yeah,
as well.
And Demirel went off. I just think it would have been entirely different. Okay, obviously this is one of these impossible things to say, but I just think if he hadn't had to go off, the whole thing would have been completely different.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those weird things with Solskjaer, isn't it? That like, even this seems to have lost its sheen. It used to be the case that like they'd go on a good run and be like, oh, they're putting something together now. They'd lose some stupid games and then his job would look like it was under threat and then he'd pull out a big win like this. But now everyone's sort of like, it's a bit like the Wizard of Oz, isn't it? You're seeing behind the curtain. It's like, oh, it sort of always does this. And like, they shouldn't have been in this situation in the first place to have to pull it back like this, especially at home with all those caveats that you've just talked about. And it looked like it wasn't going to be their night.
Key players for Atalanta, five maybe even, who weren't there.
I mean, Rashford had a few chances before he scored. I think his goal was actually the hardest of them, really, in a way. And it was really nice to see him pull that one out. But yeah, it just like, I don't know, this... It's a 3-2 win after being 2-0 down at half time. It should be something where we're all going, that was amazing, wasn't they brilliant? But it doesn't, or weren't they brilliant? Sorry, I'm speaking in my second language. but yeah, it just, it's a weird one. Solskjaer's spikiness after the game made me laugh. I'm increasingly, we see this from players and from managers, and where they're just, they seem like quite bored with the idea of media training. And like, obviously we spoke to Olivier Giroud recently, and like when you speak to more footballers, you realise the kind of...
Remind me, what happened then?
But the football bubble between the media bubble is quite a separate thing, isn't it? Yeah, and like, you can see the frustration sometimes where a player or a manager, they've just finished the game, they want to get off and get changed and just get on with their lives, but first, they've got to speak to a nerd. Like, they've got to have a little chat with a nerd, they've got to justify themselves to a nerd while the world watches, and then they can get on with it. And Solskjaer last night was like, oh, God, I just can't be bothered with this.
Yeah.
And can't be having this again.
I think there's also the awareness from him that people are gunning for him more than before. And I suppose, you know, with that atmosphere yesterday, with the fact that obviously there were boos at half time, there were a lot of people applauding him when he walked off. They were singing his name when he was doing that post-match at BT. I think to speak for Manchester United fans at this point, there's very much kind of two different camps here. There is obviously the camp where, you know, he's tactically naive. He doesn't set his teams up well or at all. And you see that against teams who can shift the ball quickly. And I'm not even talking about Manchester City or Liverpool, who United face on the weekend. But as we've seen, Atalanta, Villarreal, teams like that. Teams who United, I wouldn't say expect to be, but certainly our favourites going into those games are chasing the ball for most of it.
Yeah.
And then you've also got the other side who, you know, of United fans who see Solskjaer, someone who's playing the most engaging football since not just Sir Alex Ferguson, but a couple of years, you know, before the end of Sir Alex Ferguson. And you're also in this situation where I think they're allowed to go off the leash because it was 2-0 at half time. I think if it was 1-0, it's a different game.
Yeah.
But because it's 2-0, you can kind of, you know, take the silencer off and throw on the big guns, basically. And now, you know, you see that, and I don't know, it's hard not to get carried away with games like that. I know you're right in what you say, it's become a regular thing, but like, teams don't really come down from 2-0 down at half time, and it is quite exciting. Like, for all my criticisms of Solskjaer, I was watching yesterday thinking, fuck, this is brilliant. Like, objectively, out of context to everything else, as far as entertainment and quality of football goes, this is magnificent. As someone who couldn't give a shit about defence, I loved it. But there is obviously, then you come back to it and what Scholes was saying. Yeah, if Liverpool have a third of the calibre of the chances that Atalanta had, they'll batter them. They'll absolutely batter them. The only mitigating thing against that is the fact that Solskjaer does have a good record in these big games.
Yes. And it never goes that way, does it? You always kind of like try and put two and two together to essentially predict the future, and it's rarely actually works out that it's four. I'm sure it won't be like a 4-0 win to Liverpool, which at the same time, now I've said that, probably means it will be.
But, Liverpool, they're hosting them at Old Trafford on Sunday. Liverpool have scored three or more goals in every away game this season.
That's crazy.
Fun fact. And on the other hand, Manchester United have kept one clean sheet in their last 20 games, 12 games without a clean sheet at Old Trafford. That's their worst run since the 60s. But hey, like Bish says, he doesn't care about defence, so I
don't care about defence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You, Vish, don't care about defence, and football fans probably don't, in many cases, care about defence. As they say, no one wants to be Gary Neville, right? Yeah. Paul Scholes says, I am miserable, so I will be miserable. We were poor.
He was amazing last night. He was absolutely brilliant. Like, a lot of people think he's dour and, like, you know, too miserable, but I'm all for that. That's his character. He's you know, settling in to be one of the top curmudgeon pundits, if you ask me.
But I don't understand why he made his point and they kept asking him, yeah, but, like, what? And he's like, no, but, like, I've said
over,
yeah.
And over.
Like, they kept going at him again.
You've got time, to fill, and he's very expensive.
Isn't it the case, though, that, like, it's so weird with both Scholes and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, in that, like, Solskjaer's defence and Scholes' criticism are often the same thing in, like, a slightly different tone, which is just like, it's Man United.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Also last night, getting the win were Chelsea. They beat Malmo 4-0 at home. Andreas Christensen getting his first goal for Chelsea.
What a goal, too.
What a goal. A couple of penalties for Jorginho put away. Kai Havertz as well, getting one just after half-time. I was going to say this is, like, the ultimate kind of example of a professional win, right? But can it be that, Jim, if you're one of your main, or possibly two of your main goal scoring threats, although Timo Werner's massive miss early doors might add fuel to the fire that he isn't. But anyway, him and Lukaku both injured in that game, and Tuchel says they may be out for some time. So can that still be a professional win if you've accidentally lost your main attacking threat?
Yeah, well, it certainly comes at a cost, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, I find it very difficult to kind of have too much sympathy. Vicious put Beret the barrow back on, sorry, and it's all gone to chaos. Yeah, I think that will probably be all right. If you look at Hudson-Odoi coming on, he did incredibly well. Kai Havertz came on as well and scored. Like, they are built to weather this, aren't they? This is the thing with these modern sort of super squads. It's the same with Man City as well. Like, obviously, any team is going to struggle without two of your main goal threats like that. But of all the teams that are going to be able to handle it, I think Chelsea are right up there. So it's not too much of a crisis, I would argue.
Yeah, that's true. Elsewhere, Bayern pummeled Benfica 4-0 in Lisbon. I believe our Andy Brassel was there to bring us the scandal. I don't know if he managed to get hold of Benjamin Pavard, but he's been saying some really... He's been honest and authentic, I would say, in the press this week. He says, great coaches put me at right back because they have confidence in my abilities. It is not because of my beautiful eyes or my hair. On paper, Pavard is... third person, shame. Is perhaps less sexy than Hakimi or Alexander Arnold. But I think that defensively, I am more complete.
A lot to unpack there, isn't there?
Football's really quite horny at the moment, isn't it?
It's really confident, isn't it?
Yeah. I think
maybe... Oh, he's making a feature of himself being not fit, basically.
No, but he's saying, like, I think he's, like, pushing, you know, you can't say you've got beautiful eyes and hair and then be like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not as sexy. I think he's not. He's waiting for someone to come out and be like, no, you're Benjamin. Come on, Benjamin, you are. Yeah.
It sounds like he's, like, had a few drinks, doesn't it? And he's starting to get a bit, like, solipsistic at the end of the night.
So he's not saying I think he's saying he's not got beautiful eyes or hair. Or you
no,
think
it's
he's
not because of
to...
my beautiful eyes. He's saying this is why he plays right back. That he's obviously not as forward thinking or like forward playing as Trent Alexander-Arnold or Hakimi, but he plays there because he's defensively robust and he's not just a pretty thing, you know,
right,
being put in place like an ornament.
And you can play, but you could play pretty football without being a pretty lad.
No, but it does help, doesn't it? It just helps the general aesthetic.
Yeah, if your opponent is swooning,
yeah,
then it gives you a little bit of an advantage, doesn't it?
Can be quite distracting, isn't
Incremental
it?
Incremental marginal gains, you know?
Do you think so?
Yeah, if he was trying to push someone and they were just like running their hands through his hair, he could go down, claim a foul, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Mimicking his accent, I don't know. In the Europa League, Leicester came back from 2-0 down to beat Spartak Moscow 4-3 in the end in Moscow at 3:30 in the afternoon. Getting used to these sort of dentist appointment situations. Patson Daka definitely is. He scored all four, including the fastest hat-trick in Europa League history, taking just 9 minutes at the start of the second half. He's now Leicester's joint top goal scorer in European history. What a player he is. Got his first Premier League goal on the weekend against United.
Yeah, now he's banging him in for fun. That's good news for Leicester. Also, Jordan Larsson, Henrik Larsson's son, played and scored in that game as well. So that's nice, isn't it? He looks like him as well. I mean, obviously, he is his kid. But, like, it's like it is
all
like,
right, Jeremy,
like a regen.
Kyle.
Yeah. James Maddison had a decent game as well. Yeah, it was quite nice to see him in the classy assist.
Colin pulling the strings again.
Yeah. Getting back to business. Yeah, so Dakers plays for Zambia and signed for $23 million last summer. And he says his hero is Jamie Vardy. I don't know in what respect specifically.
Probably football. Let's assume football.
Yeah, fair enough. Vish, before we move on to the break, I think we need to bring you in as our social correspondent on Meet the Icardis. Could you just give us any updates you might have?
Yeah, so from James Madison to Ashley Madison. So I don't know why I've become the Icardi correspondent.
It's because you're just good at it. If the hat fits.
Yeah. And it doesn't. So we talked about Icardi on Wednesday's show and about the nonsense with Wander Icardi. And then we thought the fire alarm had got us the big news, the breaking big news of Steve Bruce's exit.
Mm.
We realised that actually an hour later, news came through that Mauro Icardi had unfollowed all accounts on Instagram apart from Wanda. And yeah, it's absurd. So I went through his account.
So he's got following now. If you go into his Instagram, he's following just one person.
His wife. Sounds like a condition, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think he's trying to... Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, because I think he... Because, you know, the thing yesterday was Wanda went through his phone and found these, you know, messages from people who shouldn't have been messaging. And I wonder if a few of those messages would have come through Instagram DM.
Yeah, almost certainly.
So he just follows her. I went through his account and he, as someone who's currently wearing a stupid hat, he has a comical hat. And Kate, you mentioned this actually. You drew my attention to it.
Yeah, well, like, I thought it was a look that I didn't know about, but you're telling me it's a gift from Wanda.
I think it's a gift from Wanda.
It's a mocking gift.
No, but I think it's
so got some, a tracking device in it.
Yeah, like the Homer Simpson hat with the with the camera. I actually think what it is, I think it's a hat that she knows is rubbish, and is forcing him to wear it because it takes him down a peg or two.
Yeah.
And I also think he's wearing it as a sign of his trust that he's like, no, because you bought it for me, so I'll wear it always. Yeah. And they both know what's going on here.
It's like a hat of devotion.
It's a test of a hat, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's wearing it all the time and it looks absurd. And as one of our producers pointed out, he's got really good hair, so he shouldn't be wearing a hat that regularly. Yeah.
Well, maybe Wanda wants the hair just for herself.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, we forgot about this as well, but obviously, you know...
That's very Saudi relevant, isn't it?
Well, he met Wanda while she was married to his teammate, Maxi Lopez, with whom she has three children. And we didn't realise until today, or I'd completely forgotten, that Icardi has a tattoo of Maxi Lopez's kids, which is, I would imagine, is probably quite controversial in Maxi Lopez's head.
Controversial. I mean, I would go further than controversial.
A bit intrusive, maybe.
Yeah,
quite some flex, isn't it?
It's a hell of a story, this. More as we get it, Avish?
Yes, more next week.
No, I think, the exciting thing is, I think, are you not on tomorrow?
I am, yeah.
So join us for episode 3 of Meet the Icardis.
We have to interview him for Ramble Meets.
Yeah, absolutely.
We? Yeah.
How's your Spanish accent?
For much more of this kind of, bullshit, it won't be this kind of chat on the continent, will it? For much more useful European football chat, get over to Football Ramble Presents. Today's On the Continent is Dotton, Lars Siverton and Andy. Andy's fresh back from Portugal. They're going to be discussing the favourites at the halfway point of the group stages. There's an update from Whispering Claude in France. Get over to Football Ramble Presents for that. All right, we're going to a break now. And when we get back, these guys... will hopefully not still be wearing berets. See you in a minute.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hello, I'm Hazel Hayes.
And I'm Sheehan Todd.
And welcome to our brand new podcast, We're Not Fucking Historians. It sounds like I'm saying we're not fucking historians.
Yeah, we're saying we're not experts.
We're not historians ourselves. Not that we're not having sex with historians.
No historians getting fucked on this pod.
Zero historians getting fucked on this podcast. We are, in fact, your alternative guide to Irish history.
Every week we prize open the history books and find a new tale from the Emerald Isle's colourful past. We're exploring Ireland's traditions, its rich heritage, and its long, proud history of being invaded by literally anyone with a boat. The Vikings were showing up at the monastery going, where's that booty?
The earliest booty call.
It's the booty call you didn't want. 50 Scandinavian Vikings showed up.
Or our biggest celeb, St. Paddy. He says he prayed up to 100 times a day and sometimes during the night.
That's what a five-year-old would say. I prayed 100 times, I swear. Patrick also said he was fastest in his slippers. He's a fucking Billy bullshitter.
If, like us, you're the kind of person who's interested in history, but not so interested that you'd go read a book about it or listen to actual experts, then this is the show for you.
This is history done differently, with a couple of facts and plenty of crack.
So, join us on our journey through Ireland's past.
Search We're Not Historians on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember,
We're not fucking historians. Sorry, I was far too fast there.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold on, please, Gary.
Hold on, please, everybody. Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Me, Jim and Vish in your ears. This lovely whatever time of day it is for you. Now it's time for some emails.
They're reading out your emails. Yeah, 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 yeah. They're reading out your emails. Because they were sent in to show at footballramble.com. Where all the best banter originates from.
Emails.
Gavin Cook has been in touch. He says, I've had a couple of odd driving instructors. One was a good instructor, but he did think smoking a pipe while instructing me was appropriate. Not sure how much I learned with him, as it was difficult to see the road through clouds of smoke. Although thinking back, I suppose I could have pretended I was a contestant on Stars in Their Eyes. Again, probably not that useful a context in which to learn to drive. Anyway, the instructor I wrote in about used to toot and swear under his breath when I made a mistake, and it was very stressful and off-putting. One day, I'd had enough. So I just pulled over and said, look, mate, the big L on the roof means I can't fucking drive. He then asked if I'd like to step out of the vehicle for a fight. He was a big fella, so I just told him to fuck off and stormed off down the street. Unbeknownst to me, the street was a cul-de-sac. So I had to turn back around and storm past him again. He then followed me in the car, asking if I still wanted the scrap he so kindly offered minutes earlier. Safe to say, that was my last lesson with him. I got a new instructor and learned more in 3 weeks than I did in 6 months with Fighty Driving Man. I passed my test soon afterwards. That sounds terrifying.
Oh, congrats, Gavin. Glad you got a Did you have to fight him?
I don't think that man should really be teaching people to drive. It seems a bit aggressive.
He could have had like a standoff with him where they just rocks up in his car. It's like,
yeah.
You know, there's almost like a Karate Kid element to it.
Yeah.
He's gone away, learned to drive elsewhere. So he's got his own car to hit his car with.
But the thing is, you're
like
paying
a bumper car.
Clearly,
you spent money on a car he doesn't mind smashing up, which would be quite intimidating.
You're paying for lessons there. He's paid. So effectively, that guy is like a service provider who is then trying to fight.
And by the sounds of it, trying to provoke him as well. Man sounds like a maniac. If anyone else has learned with this man, let us know.
Oh,
I want to know more.
Fish has got one that people might have learned from.
James in Auckland has emailed in. I obviously won't be alone in this, but I was given driving lessons from former Aston Villa European Cup winner Alan Evans.
Football's different now, isn't it?
Yeah, imagine getting a lesson from like Kante.
Yeah.
Why don't you just walk?
Just run.
Yeah. Being a Villa fan in Cornwall is pretty rare. So when I found out Alan was giving out driving lessons in my hometown, there was no other place I was going. Many a story of how shit some players were at training or how footballers turned soft would go by as we cruise the streets of Plymouth. Anywho, one quote will always stick with me, and it's one of my mates' quote as well. Anytime you are rough with the gear stick, he say in his thick Scottish accent, "Easy with a stick pole." Classic. I don't mind that. I quite like that. Yeah. But, you know, there was Fisher's arse talk last week that Jules was perplexed by. And I mean, that's much more wholesome.
Mm. Yeah. I think that was quite a nice way to, I think, wrap the driving instructor chat probably for now.
Weird breed.
On the football ramble.
I had a good driving instructor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was just like, good, nice. Yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake. What sort of story is that?
He still messaged me Happy New Year every year.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
That is, I suppose you should bring in a bit of balance there. Yeah. To the driving instructor, to the endless, like, slightly ridiculous driving instructors thing.
Yeah.
We love it when you get in touch with us. So keep the emails coming in, show@footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble. Now it's time for the farewells. In fact, maybe you should send your emails in to say farewell to Steve Bruce, because I feel like he didn't get enough of a send off from you guys and Pete yesterday. 27 months of Bruce later, he has gone. We thought we'd spend a bit of time reflecting on that today and considering really his achievements over that era. He certainly stayed up, didn't he? They went to
twice, yeah.
They went to 12th at one point, and he made seemingly none of the fans happy.
Yeah.
When I accidentally stumbled into this by sort of lamely echoing people who said he was sort of quite nice to Pete, I think we really cut into the heart of the experience of being a Newcastle fan.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the case with him leaving as well. I mean, Alan St. Maximan posted a really nice tweet, which I'll just read now, which said, "You are without a doubt one of the most gentle people that I've ever met in the world of football. You've been a man of your word, a caring man and a fair man who never hesitated to protect us. I will never forget how you treated me. For that, I will be forever grateful." And the replies to it are really depressing. It seems like any sort of call for empathy for Bruce has acted as a sort of clarion call for more abuse. And it's all like 7 wins in 30, that, net spend that. But there's been no like allowing for Steve Bruce just being a human being who's clearly very upset by this situation. And I know, like, you know, he spent a lot of money that Rafa Benitez didn't have, and like nobody really wanted him there, and it's been really, really horrible. But it's like, I found it really depressing to see that like the human side of it just be completely ignored for all of these grievances to constantly be aired afterwards. And obviously not every Newcastle fan is like that, and obviously Twitter is a bad representation of the human race in general, but it's been a really toxic situation, and it is the best for everyone involved that it's over now. But it's a shame that it's ended in such an undignified manner for him, really.
I don't think it ended that way. I mean, I think it's been like that for quite a while. And I think also, yeah, of course, I completely see what you're talking about in terms of abuse. And obviously, we've spoken about this many, many times on the Ramble. Like, it's just completely uncalled for to abuse anybody in any way, in any job, when they're just like at work. It's just horrible, obviously. The thing, I suppose, on the Newcastle side of the fans, of course, they've been living it in a lot more depth than we have.
Of course, yeah.
And there's this very much, this, I guess, looking back at some of the things that have come out, particularly now in the kind of retrospectives, that he sort of seems to, of course, people saw him as Ashley's man, which is never going to help you in the eyes of the supporters, but he also seems to come across in some ways as a kind of part-time ambivalent manager, Vish. Have you heard these sort of stories about him coming back late from his holiday and people looking for other people, they're going back to their old clubs to do their professional training exercises because there's just didn't feel like there was any setup at Newcastle to do that.
Right, yeah. I suppose in that way, like, he was always a bit of a throwback. And you mentioned the, you know, this, it's the attitude towards him from Newcastle fans has been there from the start. I think it would have been for any other manager that took over after Benitez, given how loved Benitez was by Newcastle fans, and also, you know, how much Benitez did with very little. And now, obviously, you know, fast forward 2 years and set that against what Bruce spent, as Jim, I think you mentioned before. Yeah, like, the grievances are there. I also think, you know, the St. Maximin thing and the Newcastle fans replying to it is also reflective of that player-fan bubble.
Yeah.
Whereby, you know, St. Maximin was, you know, the only consistent attacking threat under Bruce. And I suppose he gave him a free rein to be as involved as he wanted to be. And lucky for Newcastle fans, that was a lot.
Yeah.
And so I can totally understand why St. Maximin sees Bruce as an ally in that regard. The Ashley stuff was always going to be a huge issue, especially when it became abundantly clear early on that Bruce wasn't going to push back on anything above him. Whereas that was, Benitez was, you know, by the end of Benitez's tenure, it was quite public, wasn't it? He would talk often about how there was this disconnect between not just Ashley, but the board above him and what he wanted to achieve with the club. And yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll say about Bruce, and I've mentioned this before, is that he did take advantage of that situation beyond, like, obviously, you know, anyone offers you a job, you're going to take it. It's a big job to have. I know people term it as a poison chalice, but to be a local guy as Bruce was and to have the opportunity to get it right, that would have been, you know, a huge thing for him to do. I think he was wildly out of his depth from the start, but I can understand why he took it. I then think how he retained it and how he, you know, he was almost trying to tell Newcastle fans that they were deluded. And I think he was playing into the wider theme that other fans, or the wider view of other that other fans have of Newcastle fans, is that they think that they should go and win the league. They don't necessarily think they should go.
No, they don't.
They just want better football. They want something to entertain them on a Saturday when they give up, you know,
not just
time
be a complete
and money to watch
They want it to feel. They want to feel like there's some sort of progress available to them. And I think that
they want to feel something.
Yeah. And also, when you've got an owner like Mike Ashley, who's like had them standing still for such a long time, the frustration of that must be like just through the roof. Essentially, like there's a similar, but obviously not as. Not yet as disastrous situation with the Cronkers at Arsenal. So I do sympathise with that. That sense of just complete inertia.
Yeah.
It will drive you mad eventually.
Yeah. And then, like, it's a bit there at Manchester United under the Glazers, but the difference is Manchester United are spending money getting players like Sancho and Pogba and bringing Ronaldo back so that you do get that on-field excitement. Whereas Newcastle, it was nothing really, yeah.
Yeah, he leaves Newcastle winless this season, 3 points adrift of safety, and they've conceded, interestingly, more than anyone else. He has said some sad stuff, which you kind of referenced, Jim. I think it might be my last job. It's been very, very tough to never really be wanted, to feel that people wanted me to fail and saying that I would fail, that I was useless, a fat waste of space.
Listened to the show last week, didn't he?
Tactically inept cabbage head.
Yeah.
The squad were also calling him Mike Bassett behind his back.
Yeah. I mean, he'd lost the dressing room, didn't he? But clearly a long time ago. That happened.
This is all this conflict about, you know, how he left them out to dry, about not passing on his instructions and various other bits.
Also, I mean, it's, you know, obviously we're calling for empathy. He did a terrible job. Like, that those two things can coexist. Absolutely. And I think that's just what happened here. It's like,
yeah, you can retain your humanity while criticising.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's, yeah, I mean, it makes sense for them to just do it now, doesn't it? There's absolutely no point in like being sentimental about it. If Newcastle want to improve now that they've got all this finance, there's absolutely no point in just waiting around thinking, oh, let's just, like, you know, just out of respect or out of dignity or whatnot. They obviously want to just like crack on with the new regime as quickly as possible.
Well, I think the reverse has happened though, because if that was the case, it would have been much better if he'd been sacked before the Spurs game on the weekend.
No, because
you know, it's a few games.
No, but it does make a difference. Like the...
It's one game.
No, but it did in terms of, I mean, obviously it would have been hard for it to be like a lovely, charming exit anyway, but there was something really rancorous, I thought, around the stadium in that in that game, and just in that context, and the way that he wasn't, you know, it was clear that the fight he then had with in the press conference, that it was clear he was obviously the deadest of dead men walking.
That's easy to say with hindsight though, isn't it? It's not like they could have announced the takeover and then go, oh, by the way, Bruce, you sacked.
I don't know. I think it could have been handled better. People linked with the job include Paolo Fonseca. Do we feel like the former Roma, Shakhtar Donetsk and Braga coach has got plenty of specialism in relegation scraps?
This pisses me off. As a supporter of a banter club, and I'm sure you'll agree with me on this, Kate, the idea of Newcastle being taken out of the banter club league is a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, we have... They've been our bread and butter for years on this show. This affects us as well. No one's talking about this.
It's the Simpsons mean of come join us, isn't it? On the couch. Yeah. On the couch of banter.
Yeah. Oh,
what does that? What does that mean? Your two respective sides, are they going to have to do a bit more heavy lifting?
I think
do you have
we to probably kind of, will. Yeah.
Do you have to? Well, maybe you have to go out and try and court more banter clubs.
The slapstick nature of Newcastle.
Everton are always there. Everton are always there about, aren't they?
I don't feel it from Everton though. I don't quite feel it. Someone's going to have to step up.
Maybe
Sunderland will have to get promoted again and then become a disaster from a position of, you know, success.
Other managers under consideration, apparently, including Lucien Favre, Roberto Martinez, Frank Lampard and Wayne Rooney is apparently interested. Tonight, plenty more football to come for you. West Ham up against Genk. Vitesse versus Spurs. In that Spurs game, none of the 10 outfield players that played against Newcastle at the weekend have travelled to Vitesse. Not a single one.
What are they doing instead, do you think?
Piss up.
Why not?
Some sort of conditioning.
No better time.
I hope. Some sort of team bonding exercise, you know, like the one where you've got to, you're all on a raft and someone's got to make the decision of how you, no, you haven't done that one.
Get the chicken. What? And the grain and the box over.
Or the thing where you like balance up cereal boxes or whatever to create some sort of stable.
What do you do with your friends?
it's like corporate teamwork.
That's what you do with your friends, corporate teamwork.
Yeah.
No.
Well, she went on holiday. She went to Spain and did a holiday of just walking.
You did.
You guys have never had like serious jobs, have you, in your whole lives?
I had a sort of serious job for a bit.
Did you not do any corporate teamwork building exercises?
We had training courses that were called mind gyms. Is that corporate enough for you?
Oh, wow.
There we fucking go.
What did
go,
you do
bitch?
In your mind gym?
Jokes on you.
I didn't go. this is ITV, by the way. So it's very corporate, media-y, wanky sort of thing.
Okay.
Long time ago.
I can't believe you've never tried to work out how to get off a raft.
Well, I can't swim. I would never get in
off
a raft.
I fall in.
It's a fictional raft. It's like an imaginary raft.
So you don't even get to do the raft bit?
No, it's like you stand on the floor, you mark out the raft and you make it a sort of a debate about who would you leave on the
raft. Okay.
And this is what you do with your friends?
No, not my friends. The corporate hellhole that
is this
I escaped
why you, is
from.
Is this why you want to be French?
No.
Because they have more fun than deciding. They're not even, at least they get real rafts.
I'm getting the sense that it might be time to get out of here. If you know about this sort of corporate training, please get in touch. Show at footballramble.com. Prove that I'm not out of my mind. All right, Gems and Vitushin, thank you so much for coming in. Nice to see you. Like your hat. I'm not going to let you say goodbye tomorrow. it's you again, Vish, and it's me, and it's Luke. Thanks for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
Marshall.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that. Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.